supposed to be snowy.
All right, Luke 1. We're still on verse 5. And there was in the days of Herod, the king of Judah. And we've been talking about the different Herods. And yesterday we talked about Herod the Great. And we talked about Herod Antipas. And we talked about Herod Agrippa, the first one. And now we're on Herod Agrippa II, the son of one. He was 17 when his father died in 44 A.D. But 4 years later, he received from Claudius the kingship over vast areas. So he was 21 years old when he became king over most of the whole area that included parts of Jordan and parts of Lebanon and today is in all of Israel, and anyway, bunches of stuff. And I say he had the right to appoint the Claudius, the emperor, had given him the right to appoint the high priest, and that was the beginning of the end of Jewish good favor in the eyes of the Roman emperor. But he's talked about a lot in Acts 25 and 26. And so we're not going to read them all, but I'll just get the highlights. So go to Acts 24 first. This is when the Jews, a whole body of Jews had... It says that, I'm going to just read it. And this is all the way back to 23 in verse 12. And when it was day, certain of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under a curse. Actually, it was under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. And that's pretty interesting. So what happens then? In questioning, they find out he's a Roman citizen, a free man. And so he was examined by Felix. And he then, found out he was a free man and found nothing that was worthy of killing, it wasn't Felix that did that. Now he's sent to Felix. And he called unto him 2 centurions, saying, make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, and spearmen 200, at the third hour of the night, and provide them beasts that they may set Paul on, and bring him safe into Felix the governor. Now Felix was then called a procurator,
yeah.
And which meant that he primarily was in charge of taxes for a particular area and the funding of things. He was sort of like a secretary of the treasury for that area. So he's going to Felix. And then they get him there to Caesarea. And I remember Caesarea was a coastal town that was a regional headquarters for Rome. It was this humongous city that on the port city that Herod the Great had built. And then just go to verse 5. We're just going to look at a couple. We'll study these in detail later. The high priest, was in 24 verse 1. And after 5 days, Ananias the high priest descended with the elders, with a certain orator named Tertullian, who informed the governor against Paul. And when he was called, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, "Seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest hear us of the clemency, of thy clemency, a few words. We have found this man, Paul, a pestilent fellow, a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who also has gone about to profane the temple, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain Lysias came upon us and with great violence took him away out of our hands." Now, commanding the accusers, come on to these. So they came on to Felix first. Now, Felix was a bad man. He had no clemency for the Jews in any way. But what happened was, while this was happening, Felix received word that he was going to lose his position, and a guy named Festus replaced him. And so then Festus came, and both of them heard Paul's defense. And they didn't know what to do with him either, so they sent him to Agrippa, this kid. They're at Agrippa 2. And so, in verse 13 of Acts 25, "After certain days, King Agrippa and Bernice came into Caesarea to salute Festus. And when they had been there many days, Festus declared Paul's case unto the king, saying," and on they made all these charges against Paul again. And then Paul, in verse 26, then comes before Agrippa. And this is when he testifies of his conversion. And he says to Agrippa, he said in verse 1, "Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Thou art permitted to speak for thyself. Then Paul stretched forth the hand and answered for himself, I think myself happy, King Agrippa, because I shall answer for myself this day before thee, touching all things whereof I am accused of the Jews, especially because I know thee to be expert in all customs and questions which are among the Jews. Wherefore I beseech thee to hear me patiently." Then he goes on the whole defense. He testifies of his conversion. And then in verse 27, it says, "King Agrippa, believest thou the prophets? I know that thou believest. Then Agrippa said unto Paul, Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And after that, then Agrippa didn't know what to do with him, so they sent him to Rome. Now, under Roman law, there was no penalty of death to him for anything. It was only the Jews that had a death penalty on him. And so had he not appealed to Rome, saying he was a Roman citizen and a free man, he probably would have been killed. But what happens now is there's this... the changeover happens in the Roman. So he's sent to Rome, and you know all about, we've studied that or looked at it, by Agrippa. Oh. Now, just in terms of Agrippa, Agrippa was the last of the Herodian dynasty. He died, he had a long reign. It was even past the destruction of Jerusalem. But he died when he was 73, and it was the last of the Herodian dynasty. After that, they didn't even try to have any kind of a It was just another troublesome province, and it was run totally by the Roman centurions. So that's a thumbnail sketch of all of the Herodians. And it's a little more, probably more in the thumbnail. But let's go back to Acts now. Anybody have any thoughts about any of this?
I just remember that younger Agrippa there was buddies with Claudius or something.
Yeah, like he was.
They grew up together because
right.
The older Herod had been there hustling up, you know, making networking. He was
Rome. He was a politician.
trying to get the...
But his son was educated. This Agrippa I, they had sent him to Rome for his private education. He was a contemporary with Claudius. They were friends when Claudius became emperor. And then this is now in the time period when all hell was breaking loose, and Nero became emperor. And shortly thereafter, after this point, that's when Paul was. In his last letter, he had already, as we said, he had already had his first hearing before the tribunal, and now he was about to be sentenced to death, and he knew it. So anyway, let's go back to Luke. Chapter 1, verse 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zechariah of the course of Abijah, and his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. The word course is the word ephemeria, and it means a day-to-day service, but it's implied in it that lasted 7 days. As we've heard before, David divided the priest into 24 classes. And each of those classes, they discharge their duty for an entire week from Sabbath to Sabbath. And so they move through the courses. So the priests had to, sometimes they were, the ones that went into the holy place, which was a course of Abijah, which was the guarding or the lighting and care of the altar of incense, which was the second most important thing. They had to have met all kinds of qualifications, and as I've told you before, Zechariah was a biggie in the priesthood. His wife Elizabeth was of the the bloodline back to Aaron. It's the highest they could get. And so then when we'll get to their birth, I mean the birth of John the Baptist in a minute. He was of the course of Abijah, and that's discussed in 1 Chronicles 9 and in 24. But the word Abijah means my father is Yahweh. So anyway, he was of the course of Abijah. And they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. Now you'll see this described often in the scriptures, that they were blameless, that they were righteous before God. Now, how could that have been before Christ? Because Christ was the only righteous one. And the way that it's they saw the mystery of the offerings. It's just like it says of David, Jesus said of him, I mean of Abraham, that he saw my day and was glad. Each of these that are called blameless and righteous before God, They saw, just like I pray that you see, that their Messiah was the only righteousness. And every one of the sacrifices was only a parable or a type concerning this mystery. And by seeing that mystery, they were righteous, walking in the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. Now the word blameless there is a biggie. And you got to hear this. The word blameless is that there is no credible accuser. And so before any mystery or before any law or before any standard and before God himself, there is no credible witness against you. And the word blameless is used often in the scriptures about you as people. And your walk, your obedience will be fulfilled when you finally see that there is no credible witness against you, but especially all of those stupid voices in your mind, all of those places where you're still hiding guilt and shame. They have no standing. But they have standing in you as long as you believe it, as long as you give it any credence. And the mystery is, you may think that you've handled all these situations, but if there's one place where you condemn yourself, then it all goes back to nothing. Because you've heard me say this, it's kind of a kiddingly way, but it really is true. You think that your situation, that you are so special, that the sacrifice of the Son of God wasn't enough for you. So you're still running about trying to establish your own righteousness, trying to establish your own purpose, trying to have some meaning in a meaningless life. And as long as you do that, you're still locked in this terrible place called time and space. And it'll affect every aspect of your life. You may have moments of freedom, but in the midnight hour, anybody know what I'm talking about? So you can't. You have to know that you have been perfected forever by one offering. Your mind, your past has nothing to do with anything any longer. So that he can say of you, you're blameless and righteous before God. Amen. There's nothing else until you know that. You see the importance of this? Because this word, when it says, They were both righteous before God, walking. Remember, walking, that means the full course of their life. That's why there can be no place where this isn't true. And I am sorry, but I see, and you know, I see people that have been here forever and they're still, there's not blameless, because they still believe that there's a credible witness against them. Or they act like none of this is important, which is really funny. Let's go to 2 Peter. John, any additions, comments on this?
Just the blameless is not the same as saying you didn't do anything. It means there's no blame.
That's right.
That's why they mentioned both of them. It's like, right, you know, they were both righteous, walking in the commandments. The Lord blameless, like, that's about as pretty blanket statement of no credible witness against you as you can get. So all those things were wrapped up in, and they weren't any different, you know, from...
They're the same as we are.
And they could see the Messiah.
I guess in a way, if everybody is a sinner and sin and are all fallen, then why would I listen to anybody else's criticism?
And your own.
Oh, and my own. I do plenty of that.
But once you stop listening to your own, no one else's will affect you. The only way that something that somebody else says or does can affect you is if you're not transparent. Nothing can stick. Well, that's why, I mean, you know, people get furious at me, obviously. Because I go to those places in you and point them out. You don't want to know that. All right. They were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord blameless. Now in 2 Peter. Chapter 3, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, and the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of person ought you to be in all holy conversation, your walk, and godliness? Looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new land, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that you look for such things, be diligent that you may be found of him in peace, without spot and blameless. You are already blameless. It's not something you're going to be. You are already without spot. The only enemy is your mind that keeps you locked into the lower realms, keeps you constantly trying to establish your own righteousness, your own purpose, your own raison d'etre. Is that how you pronounce that? Carolyn lived in France. Oh, I thought you lived there. Oh, just your parents lived there. They left you behind. They abandoned you.
I took her off their hands.
Huh?
I took her off their hands.
So you had a choice between Paris and John?
It's sort of like a song.
Oh. I don't feel like talking anymore.
You know, I was reading this thing. It's like righteousness is in this new heavens and new earth. And so that's where it is. And so that's where we actually are.
Amen.
You know, and right now.
Remember, this book is only about two different environments and the what is in the two different environments. The law is spiritual. It's either about where you are. If you're in time and space, it's just stupid. You are on the mercy seat, in the heavens, wherein dwelleth righteousness, wherein dwelleth everything, peace, everything. Every aspect of your heart's desire is there. But you can't be there by sorcery. You can't be there because, well, that's where I want to be. You can be there only by seeing the emptiness and futility of everything else. But the minute you try to establish your own rightness, you've elevated from the dead, from his deadly wound, the evil one again.
You're looking like you're not finished.
No, I want to see where we stop. So I would know where to start.
You're going to one more place.
No, I'm not. No, that's it. Blameless is a good place to start. Stop. It's a good place to start. All righty. Anybody else have any thoughts on all this? I wanted to read Acts 23, 4, 5, and 6, but we'd have been here till May if we did that. So we'll have to wait until we study Acts.
We can read it on our own.
All righty. Take it, big guy.
It's homework.
Yeah, your homework.